Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Dan Lynch joins me. We're going to be talking about Siegel, a Seattle conference for GNU Linux people. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Dan Lynch, episode 483, recorded May 10th, 2018, Siegel. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/floss. And by IT Pro TV, flexible and entertaining training for your IT career. Visit itpro.tv/floss and use the code FLOSS30 to get a free 7-day trial and 30% off a monthly membership for the lifetime of your active subscription. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, little projects, projects you may be using every day and not aware of it, projects you might want to download and play with right after this show. Today's show is not going to be either of those. It'll be something entirely different. But nevertheless, we will have a show. Joining me once again, let's see if I can use words this time. Joining me once again is my lovely and talented co-host, Dan Lynch. Dan, welcome back to the show.
Hey, it's good to be back. Yeah, it's been a little while, but you know, you can't keep me away too long. I found you.
I know. And where are you speaking to us from? Probably somewhere near Liverpool.
I am. Yeah. I'm just on the outskirts of Liverpool in the UK, which is kind of in the northwest of England, if people know it. And that's where I am at the moment. In fact, the weather here is usually awful compared to you guys in California and so on, but it's so bright today. I've had to shut the blind down because it was going to wash out the screen. So I'm just amazed by that. That's never happened before. I've never had to shut this before. So, I'm hoping that it's going to keep going and we're going to get good weather.
And I think you qualified that statement a little overqualified, but you said it's in the northwest of England. If you know that, it's also there if you don't know it.
It's like when people can't see it, when people don't look at us, we don't exist.
That'll work. And I am speaking to you from a hotel in downtown San Francisco. I am here this week, as I've been saying for many, many weeks. I'm here for Red Hat Summit, looking for more guests for the show. So far, I've only come across one or maybe two. So I'm hoping that today, when I finally walk the expo hall one more time, I'm going to find a few more that I can bring on, because we do always have slots to fill. Well, as I said in the opening of the show, this is a slightly different show because this show is about a conference. It's about an organization that is putting together this thing called Siegel, S-E-A-G-L, which is a Seattle GNU Linux Expo. It's a two-day expo. It's absolutely free. It's on November 9th and 10th coming up. I am planning on being there. And the reason, Dan, I brought you on today is because you have a little bit of experience with conferences, don't you?
Yeah. I've organized a few conferences in my time. I don't know if they're quite as big as this one. So we'll see. But yeah, I used to organize an annual event called OggCamp, which is still going. And I believe Simon, our good friend and co-host Simon Phipps, is involved in organizing that this year. He's on the team. So we've passed it on between, I think Aaron's up next. It must be like, we have to pass it to Aaron next. But yeah, we've done that before. And I love the name because one of the great things about being here by the sea in Liverpool is we're swamped by seagulls. I say great. It's not always great when you're trying to eat and stuff and they're swooping down on you. But we got a lot of seagulls here. So, you know, I know a thing or two about seagulls as well, if we get into that.
Well, we have a couple of people who are helping organize the show coming on today, and we'll bring them on in just a minute. But I do want to mention that one of them is Adam Monson, who, when he contacted me about doing this, also reminded me that he was on a show back in November 21st, 2008, show number 47. I think back then I was still doing it with Leo. I think it was that long ago. Might not have been. It might be a little bit later after that. But it was a long, long time ago. So that's almost 10 years. I do believe this holds the award for the longest number of years between two visits from the same guest, because we've had a few repeat guests on before, but I think this has got to be the big one He's going to be joined by Salt Hale as well, who's also going to be talking to us about seagulls. So anything more before we get started?
No, I'm just keen to find out more about the event, to be honest.
Okay, well, I do have an important message before we continue, because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. The mortgage experience wasn't keeping up with the times. It was dated, and it needed a client-focused technological revolution. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. It's convenient. Their trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. It's powerful. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, Rocket Mortgage is able to perform thousands of calculations in seconds. Based on your income, assets, and credit, Rocket Mortgage can analyze all of the home loan options for which you qualify and find the one that's just right for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/floss. That's rocketmortgage.com/FLOSS. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of Floss Weekly. Now let's go ahead and bring on our first guest, Adam Monson. Adam, welcome back to the show. It's rare I get to say that.
Thank you, Randall. Yeah, it's great to be back. And as you know, I'm a huge fan ever since the Llama book. So it's great to see you again.
Awesome, awesome. I always appreciate it when people get to say that. And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm in Seattle, Washington. Cloudy, not rainy at the moment.
I'll wave in that general direction. It's over there somewhere. Okay. All right. And I'm not there, although I was there briefly at the airport on my way down to this trip. Because I usually take Portland to Seattle and wherever I go, because I get extra medallion qualifying miles, but that's a detail that's not relevant here. Let's go ahead and also bring on Salt Hale. Salt, welcome to the show.
Hi, nice to be here.
Great. And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm also in Seattle, Washington. I'm at the University of Washington.
Well, you know, it's stupid me. This is a conference that's happening in Seattle. I should have just figured both of you guys would be in Seattle, because otherwise it makes it really hard.
We have a lot
remote
of organizers,
stuff.
And they're not all in Seattle, though. That's kind of significant. It's a. I don't know if it's unique among conferences, but some people travel a long way just to organize.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Well, yeah, I know that the Pearl Conference is organized by people that are mostly remote as well. The ones I'm going to in a few weeks here. So, tell us about Seagull. How did it get started? And what's your audience? And what are you aiming for here?
Yeah, totally. Well, Seagull, as you mentioned, short for the Seattle GNU/Linux Conference. It was founded I got the exact date and time Zulu, April 30th, 11:50 p.m. Zulu, actually, when two of the other co-founders, Rob and Deb, were in a car ride. And really, it just started with them wanting a conference like Linux Fest Northwest in Bellingham. There just wasn't a conference like that in the Seattle area. And so we kicked it off back then. And it's been going. This will be our sixth year this year in November.
Wow, sixth year. And so what's the typical run? Is it like a typical multi-track conference?
Yeah, pretty much. There'll be tracks for beginners, intermediate, advanced, real focus on the introductory and beginner level, I would say. It's not just about programming. It might seem that way. It is a tech focused, but we realize very deeply that tech is about all parts of tech, all contributions. And so it's kind of whatever part you're familiar with and are interested in comes to the conference welcome.
So one of the things we hear from other conference coordinators, conference organizers, is the number of talks they have to reject. Are you at the point where you're popular enough that you get way more talks than you can ever put in your schedule?
Boy, I'm going to defer to Salt. Do you remember how many? I would say, like, I want to say 60% we're able to take. We do get quite a few submissions, definitely more than we can take. But I forget what the exact number.
Yeah, I believe this last year we got somewhere between 120 and 140 submissions, and we're able to accept about 55 of them.
Go ahead.
I should also mention something that's a little different is that we are a Friday Saturday conference, and part of that is that we're held at a local college, And so we try to get student involvement on Friday with more of the employers who aren't paying their employees to come on Saturday.
Oh, that sounds great. And so how did you work out the arrangement with the college to be able to hold the event there?
Yeah, Seattle Central was super generous when we first started. We didn't know how to start a conference. We all wanted one, but it took a real leap of faith from specifically Lisa Sandoval at Seattle Central. It's called Seattle Central Community College back then. Now it's Seattle Central College. And they said, okay, you get sponsors lined up, you get a date, and you can host here for free. So I don't know how common this kind of arrangement is, and we do pay them now. But that was pretty critical in getting started because it's a real chicken and egg problem between sponsors and site and date. Chickens and eggs, I guess.
Yeah, multiple branches on that as well. So the I'm definitely attending. I'm definitely mark those days off of my calendar, so I'll be coming up. And I've got relatives near there anyway, so I'm probably just going to hang out with them the day before, the day after. So what should I expect to see when I show up on Friday morning?
Right on. Well, I first I want to tell you what you expect not to see. You're at Red Hat Summit right
yeah.
now, right? It's
yes.
Nothing like that. So it's going to be imagine going into one large conference room at Red Hat Summit, and then the entire conference is kind of the expo hall would fit in. Our expo hall would fit in there, and then we use some of the classrooms at the college. They're great for lecturing. That's what they do in them all the time. But it's very small, intimate. Relaxed, low key. There's no registration that you have to do. You can if you want, but some people want to remain anonymous. That's totally fine. There's no charge. You can wear a badge or not. We're at that size where we don't need to worry as much. We just lean very heavily on our code of conduct and take it very seriously and make sure everyone else does as well. So there won't be giant booths with walk-in seating and giant video screens, although the sponsors get very direct, intimate connections in our expo hall. It's small enough that the sponsors make a pretty giant impact. So that's kind of a fun part we can offer that's unique to other conferences for our sponsors.
So I'm going to be with other people. How many other people are typically at these?
The headcount in the expo hall, it gets like comfortably busy. I would say 100, 150 or so fit in the expo hall. And then throughout the conference, there'll be about 500 over the 2 days.
500, that's actually pretty impressive for a small conference like this. Have you attended other conferences like Scale and obviously Northwest Linux Expo to get ideas for new things to do for the conference?
Absolutely, yeah. Salt and I have been to a number of conferences, and I watch your All Things Open Floss Weekly, and mm-hmm. we've been to OSCON. I haven't been to Scale. Salt may have been to that, but we keep in touch with those. The other conference, it's kind of a small network, and so we keep in touch. The Scale folks were our fiscal sponsor. Now our fiscal sponsor is the FSF, and I can get into that if you want, but basically it means we don't have to establish a 501c3, which is nice at this point. But yeah, that's basically it.
So, go ahead, Salt.
I would say that one of the conferences that I was really impressed by when I finally went was LibrePlanet, which is the FSF's conference. And so it's been kind of cool to see some of the parallels there.
Yeah, and LibrePlanet, that's been going a while now as well, hasn't it? I'm sad to say I've never actually made it over to Boston. It's a bit further for me, obviously. I suppose it's a long way for you guys on the other coast as well, but I've got that bit of water in the way that makes it a bit tricky. But it seems like a really good event. So people who don't know, LibrePlanet is the Free Software Foundation's conference that they run. So you got ideas from that? Did you get inspiration from the stuff that you saw there?
So one of the original organizers of LibrePlanet, Deb Nicholson, is one of the Siegel organizers. So there's been a lot of cross-pollination for sure.
Excellent. And seeing as we're talking about the FSF, this fits in really well. One of the things that I noticed, which I was really impressed by on your front page of the conference site, is it clearly states you do not need to use non-free software to register for this conference. So clearly that was a really important an important thing that you wanted to make sure was possible. So can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, I'm happy to jump in on that. That was part – we did it a couple of years ago when Richard Stallman came and keynoted, and it was actually a requirement of his. And we agreed. We said, you know, it's a goal of ours to try and obviously we're here to promote free and open source software. And so absolutely, it wasn't easy, but it was a lot of fun to be able to accomplish that and say we do that. I think folks appreciate it.
So what do you actually use for that? Because one of the things that I found in organizing events and stuff is that a lot of it tends to end up being around things like Eventbrite, which is something that we used a lot. Other conference tools are available, I should say. But we used Eventbrite a lot, which I'm sure Richard would consider very much non-free software, even though it's essentially a website. So what do you use to do that? Do you have your own software? Do you have something? Did you create something, or did you manage to get something off the shelf?
It's off-the-shelf free software called OSEM, Open Source Event Manager. I believe the OpenSUSE folks put that out. We've been in contact with their developers, and we have it's forked a little bit at this point, but we're not. I don't think we're far from mainline. But those guys have been awesome. Stella Rizzi comes to mind, and a couple of their folks there. And I believe Linux Fest Northwest is also now using OSEM. They've moved from Drupal.
Yeah, okay. I should also mention that one of the considerations when we switched to that was that FOSDEM is in the process of switching to them as well. So it's gained some traction from larger conferences.
Yeah, I mean, FOSDEM is huge. I have been to FOSDEM a couple of times. That is huge. It's if anyone who doesn't know who's listening, it's an annual event in Belgium. And it's huge. You're talking like 7,000, 8,000 people easy. So if it can handle that, then you guys should be golden, I presume. That's what you thought anyway.
Yeah, for sure. It's not that hard. It just, you know, if you believe in it, you're doing something great. I think people just show up. So the software is not a small thing, though. It would help to have budget or a specific sponsor, I think, for anybody else who's trying to start a conference. I've got all kinds of advice. Just contact me, you know, any way you can. I'm on the internet. But I didn't know we could do it, and then we did, you know, and it just took patience, people, and passion. Three Ps. Yeah. There you go.
That's pretty good. Yeah, PPP. I noticed as well, I mean, we talked about free as in speech, but also the conference is free as in beer as well. So you can attend, you know, without having to fork out a load of money, because one of the things that puts a lot of people off some of the larger, more corporate conferences is some of the costs can be really exorbitant. So is it important for you guys that people can get access, that, you know, money doesn't need to be a barrier?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's kind of a core value we share. We don't have a lot of organizational structure and bylaws, but we've discussed that internally, and that we enjoy that we can offer that. And people do show up. And the only commitment you have to make is to the code of conduct, which we publish and put all over the walls and stuff, and just make very sure that people feel comfortable. We want to establish an environment of creativity and psychological safety and just fun. And I think the code of conduct is kind of the root of that.
It's probably something that a lot of people in the free software community would be familiar with as well, the idea of the code of conduct. I mean, lots of projects have these now. So they hopefully they're used to it. When I was organizing events years ago, we had discussions about things like code of conduct, and it's an interesting one. I found that the people that we attracted, thankfully, were always pretty respectful and so on. And then later on, we brought in this kind of official code of conduct, which was good. But in the same way, I kind of felt like, you know, it was strange to need to enforce on something that was already where people were already being, you know, I suppose, cool to each other. What I used to say to them was be excellent to each other, from, you know, Bill and Ted. It was always like, you know, be excellent to each other is the advice. And not that I take all my advice from Bill and Ted, just most of it. So
yeah, I would add that it's
anything happened? Did you find it was you needed the code of conduct?
No, I mean, I think we deal with stuff as it comes up, and we communicate very readily. But I think I would say that you may feel like everything's going well for you and the people that are there, but there are other people that won't come unless they feel safe, and you don't know who they are necessarily until you reach out. And it's funny, a kind of funny thing to kind of focus on, but I think it is very important, and it makes people feel welcome and relaxed and safe. And then you get to the learning and the greeting and the kind of the ideas start bursting, and that's where it really matters, but you have to have a bit of structure there first. And we strive for that minimal structure, you know, just to save money. So we don't have to get big and pay for lots of things, but also so it's approachable.
And speaking about structure, actually, or a little bit of structure, that leads me on to something else I was thinking about. So the events that I organized were in a kind of bar camp. I think you said bar camp. That's bad, isn't it? Bar camp. They might have been a bar camp, but a bar camp format. Hopefully they weren't a bar camp. And that meant that people could just pitch talks on the day, and we'd have a few kind of keynote speakers, if you like, that were kind of set in stone, and everything else would be thrown in. But you guys have the kind of more traditional model, if you like, the more established model of people submitting papers and stuff. Do you find it? Have you thought about, you know, maybe adding a bar camp element, or is it, does it help to have stuff kind of, you know, to know who's coming and what they're going to talk about?
So,
go ahead, Salt.
Yep. We've definitely discussed this somewhat, and we do have like day of lightning talks basically every year.
Okay. Yep.
And that's been since the beginning. We're actually experimenting with a couple of different things, and have been over the last couple of years for sure. One of which is that we have two length of talks, so people can give 50-minute panels or 20-minute panels. And that's something we started last year that seems to have kind of, maybe you don't have something that can expand for a full hour long. We want it presented there. And this is gets to one of our kind of core presentation speaking, like things we promote, which is new speakers and up-and-coming speakers. You can see that with our keynotes as well. We try to attract keynotes where at least one is kind of a bigger name keynote, but one is maybe a speaker who's been doing this for some time, but not actually keynoted an event. And this year we're expanding that even a little further, and we're inviting four keynotes instead of two. So I'm giving them each half slots on the Friday morning and Saturday morning.
That's excellent, yeah, and it is a really great thing that you can give people that exposure. One of the, I don't think the bar camp thing is better or worse. Before I sound, in case I sound like I'm saying that, because we found real kind of limitations with it. But a lot of people were really tied to this idea that, you know, at a certain time, whatever it is, 9 a.m. first day, everybody kind of charges towards this wall and puts all their stuff on the wall, and they thought that was, you know, the way it should be and all the rest of it. But actually, as it went on, I realized that if you really want to include everyone, you're really only including the people who are maybe good at football or something, who can push everyone out the way and get to the wall first. It's not really a good way to include people. So I totally get what you're saying. I like that idea of having more structure to it and being able to curate, if you like.
Yeah, I should say on the note of curation, something else that's new this year that we're trying is what we're calling a code of practice. And it's kind of a code that the programming committee is signing on to about how we're going to select things, not just bring on our friends, not just bring on people. And along with this is providing help to people who are submitting talks before and during the process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted to hop on the topic of speaking and the like formal versus informal and that kind of thing. And I just wanted to say that there is, like you say, Dan, a kind of a formal structure too. At least you submit a talk, you hear back, the curate. But the bar for entry is very approachable. There's no minimum amount of academic nature or like, we welcome all submissions. Absolutely. It's a great chance to practice speaking, to learn something new and try it out. Even if you're going to go talk at a bigger conference, you're super nervous about that, bring your talk to Siegel first. I think it's a good way to do it. And it's a lot of fun. I mean, you'll never find a more welcoming crowd that wants to learn and is open and friendly.
Yeah, definitely. And I've just noticed in our IRC channel, the people chatting away, people are asking whether I mentioned football. Did I mean what you guys call soccer? I actually said football in the American sense, given that, you know, everybody else here understands it that way. not the game you actually play with your feet. But never mind, I won't get into that. So that's a really important thing. And as you said, so do you get a lot of first-time speakers there? Obviously, it's something you guys really want to encourage, and you know, could you help them to, you know, mentor them a bit or something? I don't mean necessarily personally, but maybe even pair them up with somebody who's done it a lot before, if they're happy to give them some tips and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. We do quite a bit of explicit activities to welcome first-time speakers, from titling your talk. There's brainstorming sessions on IRC. The chat room is very active when these bursts come in. They'll come in before the call for proposals, obviously, and we'll help people curate their own talk ideas. And really, honestly, it's just to help people build confidence. Like, you can do this. You can talk. Mm-hmm. You know, and we'll be friendly to you and listen to what you have to say, and we'll help you. We'll help you curate your talk idea and get your outline done. Trying to remember, what don't we do other things too, Salt, to kind of help first time speakers?
Yeah, so we actually kind of like solidified this process. We have office hours that are regular during the whole period of the CFP, where we will sit and help you craft your proposal. And again, we've tried to even expand that further this year, implementing this code of practice. And we'll see how that goes.
It's also a good idea to have people give their talk for like local user groups and stuff too, just kind of dress rehearse that. I remember that when I was practicing for bigger and bigger, even keynote talks at some point. So I can't let Dan talk all the time because I have an important message to talk about, which is this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by IT Pro TV. Do you know someone who wants to break into IT but doesn't know where to start? Are you looking to advance your IT career? Whether you're just starting out or you're a seasoned IT professional, IT Pro TV is the only source you'll need. Learn the skills to pass in the most in-demand IT search. From CompTIA and Cisco to EC Council and VMware, IT Pro TV has you covered with over 3,300 hours of binge-worthy on-demand training. New content is added daily, so your team will always be up to date. You can conveniently stream IT Pro TV's courses live and on-demand worldwide via Chromecast, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, PC, or by using their iOS or Android apps. Empower your team with interactive IT training that they'll actually enjoy watching. Gain full control over your team's training schedule and track your team's results via IT Pro TV's Pro Portal. See metrics like logins, viewing time, courses viewed, tracks completed, and more. Skip the boring voiceover slides snooze fest. Keep your team up to date and accelerate your career with effective and entertaining IT training from IT Pro TV. Simply choose a plan, create an account, and enjoy the journey. Visit itpro.tv/floss to learn more about IT Pro TV's team solution and to request a free team trial. Or sign up for an individual monthly membership with a free 7-day trial at itpro.tv/floss. Use the code FLOSS30 to receive 30% off your subscription for the lifetime of your active subscription. Premium subscriptions, which include unlimited Kaplan IT training practice exams and virtual labs, are normally $857 a year, but you pay only $600 when you go to itpro.tv/floss and use the code FLOSS30. Flexible training, binge-worthy content, ROI proven. Join the more than 90,000 IT Pro TV members today, and we thank IT Pro TV for sponsoring Floss Weekly. So I have a couple of questions because I've been a speaker before. And that whole thing you talked about just a moment ago about it being, you know, all really cool in terms of, you know, real support. I wish I had that when I started, because by the time I did it the hard way. I did it really, really the hard way. I heard you mention keynotes. Who are your keynote speakers and what are they going to be talking about?
Do you want to? I got him right here too. Molly DeBlanc. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, if you have him right in front of you, I'd have to call him.
Yeah, sure. So they're on Siegel.org, and so the heavy details are on there. But I'll just quickly go over them. That we're super stoked for these speakers this year. Molly DeBlanc, campaigns manager for the FSF. Liz Joseph, developer advocate for Mesosphere, and then Tamika Reed, founded Women in Linux. And Stephen Wally is a principal at Azure.
And so they were talking about, obviously, their area. But do you have specific themes for what they're going to be talking about?
I don't know that they've committed to their final talk topics, honestly. The on Siegel.org, you can read about their background and stuff. But I think we'll do that along with the call for proposals that's coming up. So it's not too late. It's not too late to sponsor too. And I'm glad you mentioned IT Pro TV. Mm-hmm. That education goes right along with Siegel. Maybe they want to sponsor and Stonehenge too. I think we should get Stonehenge signed up for Siegel.
Hey, yes, yes. If I was in a position to be sponsoring these days, I probably would. It's been a little slim for me for a while here. Waiting to get into my next big thing because Pearl's sort of on the downside of the hill, and now I'm waiting for the next big thing. So the next big thing is Flutter, by the way. So I'm going to be doing that. So wait. So you still have a call for papers open?
Yeah, it hasn't even opened yet, I believe, right?
That's correct. It will run from June 4th to July 28th, I believe. And on the topic of themes and such, we haven't really done an overall theme, but this year we're still kind of into discussions whether or not we'll have track themes. But so far, it's definitely we've focused on just having a large variety of talks versus trying to create any tracks or boxes.
Oh, so what I saw on the website already, I saw a full schedule. I thought this was already planned and done, but I guess that's last year's, right? No?
Sure, crickets chirping. Yes, it's last year's 2017 is what.
I think it does say 2017 at the top, Randall. I don't want to upset you, but it does say GNU/Linux conference 2017.
I was looking at it early this morning.
You can relive it.
Okay. Are any of these recorded?
This is something we've been working on over the last 2 years, and unfortunately, last year we kind of had to put that off to the side. We had some technical difficulties.
This is a huge opportunity for engagement. We need a volunteer that is expert with AV and loves doing it because AV is expensive. It's hard to get right. As you guys, I'm sure, can appreciate, we spent a good 10, 20 minutes getting our call working at the beginning of this. It's hard. It takes experts. And so we need someone that's passionate about FLOSS, can get in the area and loves to do IAV. We have some people that are doing an awesome job so far. It's just not enough bandwidth around that.
Go ahead, sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say our keynotes are recorded and available on archive.org.
Oh, that's awesome. Cool. Are you going to have better than VGA projectors? Again, crickets. I need to address this to one of the two of you guys. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
I can answer if you want, Randall. Right? Yes, they will. Yes, I'll just say that on their behalf. No, sorry.
If you submit a talk about Flutter, I will have make sure that your room has a HDMI and mini display port and USB-C connections.
Yeah, that's what was so amazing about Scale, and I shouldn't dump on Scale, but it was pretty amazing that they only had a VGA projector. And they're using the Pasadena Conference Center, Pasadena Convention Center's projector, and it was like, VGA, really? What year is it? it's like this incredibly bad ratio of things to show there. Well, so if the call for papers is still open, I might pitch talk then. That would be kind of cool. So I may be there in more than one capacity, not just to kind of hang out, but actually see things there. So what's been the most difficult thing in producing conferences like this for you two? Oh, crickets again. I got to stop doing that. If only we were all in the same room, we could look at each other. I know. Okay. Salt, what's been the most difficult for you?
Just, I'd say, putting aside the time. It takes a lot of time. We meet pretty much the entire year, and it can be a challenge, not only setting aside the time for yourself, but having everyone set aside the time. We ask a lot, but we're producing something pretty cool.
Yeah, and I'd say the same for me. You know, it's just, it's a labor of love, and the people that love it, and everybody, we are absolutely reliant on every single volunteer, including all of ourselves. None of us are paid to put on this conference, but it continues to grow and get attention and get amazing sponsors and speakers. So it's just been a lot of fun to see that people will show up because of what we do and why we do it, not who we are or how big we are. But yeah, we're also welcoming volunteers. So the call for volunteers is kind of always open, but know that it's meaningful work, and it's not just easy. There are small commitments, but the bigger commitments are more fulfilling, and I would say for individuals that do them are more fulfilling and meaningful as well. But
So a bit of a follow up to that then Adam, I found in running events over the years that, as you say, you can never have too many pairs of hands to help. You really can't. So how many people are involved in running it? Do you have like a crew, or, you know, you probably, I presumably need quite a few.
Yeah, for sure. There's kind of a core group of us, decision makers, just the organizers. And that's just, it's just a flat hierarchy. We all communicate pretty often and coordinate and are well aligned, surprisingly without much traditional hierarchical or corporate infrastructure. And then there's just a horde of 50-ish amazing volunteers that lots of day of support. That's a big thing. But then you need somebody to organize the day of support and make the sign up sheets and that kind of thing. So it's what's the core group of us? Deb, Rob, Salt, me, Vicky. John has been really involved. So there's like a core group of like 6 to 8, and then we kind of manage the masses.
And you mentioned that it can be time consuming, which is something I can really attest to. I mean, I think Salt was saying that before. So I'm going to address this one to you, Salt, seeing as I've learned from Randall there. How do you do this then? Do you do it with conference calls? You mentioned you're not all exactly in the same place all the time. How does the kind of organization process go? Do you have like a regular conference call? How do you work all that sort of stuff out? Email, is it?
So we do email, but the majority of the organizational work takes place on conference calls. We meet every other Monday, 6:30 Pacific Standard. And those calls are well, like, open for anyone who's interested in getting involved and helping out. But they are every other week up until about 3 months before the conference, and then they become weekly.
I don't mean to interrupt you. Someone was saying, is it 6:30 a.m. or p.m.? I just thought I'd have to ask that.
P.m.
I'm assuming p.m. Yeah, I assume that. Sorry, carry on.
See, it might be 6:30 a.m. for them because it's specific time. But it's pretty low tech, and that's approachable as well. It's just a matter of making the time for that. And that's kind of the trick with it is it's a lot of work, but it's addictive. And the more I find myself, I don't know if this is true for you, Saul, but the more I volunteer, the more I want to, because you see the impact it makes. You know, you see your things work, you see the sponsors sign up, you see people show up and enjoy it and get stuff out of it. And so it does kind of feel like the more you do, the more you get out of it.
I'm conscious that I cut in on you there, Salt. I apologize. So carry on.
Oh, no, yeah. I was just going to say that we also we've really tried to work with having different like subcommittees, and they arrange their own meetings to get
cool.
Kind of make that biweekly meeting not as long.
Yeah. It's almost a bit like the kernel development kind of thing. So you have like maintainers of different things, different you know, subsystems almost. You mentioned subgroups. You've got like, you know, your maintainers of different groups and so on. That's really cool. I suppose one thing I was going to ask you is, having experienced this myself, when you put the event on and you were there and you were waiting for, say, the day before, you're waiting to open, you're getting things ready. Did you get that feeling that, oh my God, what happens if nobody turns up? I've been in that position. Am I going to be stood in this room with like two other people? And how good is it when, you know, as you say, when you do actually see people turn up? So I'm going to, I'll kind of ask you both that, I suppose. But Adam, I'll start with you.
Oh, it's risky. You're going to load into the crickets. No, I that's actually kind of a cool story, because I remember feeling really calm and just like, you know, if nobody shows up, hey, I'm still here with, I think it was five of us really that had become really tight. And it's like, oh, what if we're just talking to ourselves? Well, we'd still enjoy that. You know, we'd talk about, do our little talks or something. But we knew beforehand that people were signed up to give their talks. But it was kind of neat to see a flood of students show up. It was Friday. And people would just kind of wander through, what's this thing? And then so it happened. But I remember feeling really calm that I'd be okay with it just if it was just us.
Yeah. And Salt, I was going to ask you a similar sort of thing. You know, did you get nerves the first year? Did you think, oh, God, what if this, you know, what if this doesn't like go the way we thought it might?
No, I almost have the opposite. Most conferences I go to, I'm running a table, I'm giving a talk, you know, I'm running around organizing, putting up flyers. I really don't have any time to think that it might not go right.
So that does make me think of one thing that I have to mention is when I having run a few conferences, I found that at the end of it, people would say, what was your favorite talk? I never really saw any of them because I was always doing something. So Do you get to see any of the talks? Because I ran like seven conferences and never saw one talk. I think I saw half of one and people were going, oh, this is a really good talk. And I thought, but I didn't mind because I wanted them to enjoy it and I wanted them to get something from it. It wasn't, you know, I didn't put it on for me to sit there and watch all the talks. But is that a problem? Do you get like, you know, you think, oh, I'd really like to just watch this talk, but I've really got to go and do stuff?
Yeah, I haven't seen a talk at a conference in maybe a decade.
Yeah,
it would imagine. Be great if they were recorded. And we are definitely working on that because there's somewhere I'm like, oh, I know this is a wonderful speaker. I gave them all fives trying to get them to the conference now.
That is such a challenge, though. I mean, you've mentioned this already. Adam was saying before that there's so much work involved around recording. I've also had the experience of recording, you know, 20 hours of video of different talks or more, in fact, and then a year later still having them all, most of them still unedited and thinking, when am I going to find 3 weeks to just sit and edit these? Because you want to do it, but it really, it does involve so much work. So definitely, if anybody watching or listening to this wants to volunteer AV help, I know how useful that can be. So I'm sure you guys would appreciate that. I'm conscious that wasn't a question. We never mind. That was a statement. Just agree. It's fine. So what about the social side of it then? That's a question I can ask. So one of the great things about conferences for me is often, and I think a lot of people find this, I mean, often the talks are great and that's all good, but sometimes it's like the conversations you have in a corridor or in a coffee shop or something afterwards with people, the social side of it. So do you have organized parties, Adam?
Yeah, we definitely do. Thanks for asking me specifically.
That's okay. I'm getting the hang of this.
For sure, we do. We have I believe this. We do have a Friday and a Saturday night this time, Siegel. for in November, Saul. Do you remember?
So far, Friday hasn't come together. Not yet.
Yeah, but then during the day, I mean, I got kids and family, so I'm not usually out late much anyway. Unless maybe Randall buys me a beer, I might head out. But we're so during the day is where I'm really I wake up early and I'm excited to get there early and let people in the front door. And it's lots of little it's a college atmosphere, so it's super just. You know, chill, relax. It's a city college, you know, so it's I don't know, really fun. There's lots of little tables to gather, coffee shops. And then during lunch, I mean, you just have kind of all the really affordable, yummy, different kinds of restaurants all nearby. There's actually, which you couldn't believe from Seattle, but there's actually cheap parking right nearby. I'm probably going to jinx us this year, but there's cheap parking nearby. There's definitely public transit for them all over the place. But it's kind of a great atmosphere to be right there with just as far as encouraging conversation and social situations. And then we do have that planned party Saturday, and something usually comes up on Friday as well, but the Saturday is a big one.
I will just to add on to that, we also provide coffee at the morning and an afternoon break on both days, and the Greater Seattle Linux Users Group G-Slug often kind of hosts this big like pizza lunch on Saturday during the day. Traditionally, the FSF has hosted a Friday night kind of party that's nearby, as well as, of course, yes, the conference party on Saturday night.
It's a sponsorship option. Sorry to interrupt, Dan. I won't tramp on your sponsorship option.
Go for it.
Well, just stop me if I'm pitching too much. That's my job sometimes.
That's okay.
But for sure, somebody can pick that up explicitly. Sometimes there's a specific sponsor, like Salt was saying, the FSF does their own kind of free software gathering. But if a certain sponsor wants to pick up the party and just nail it, they do that too. It's same with coffee or childcare. If somebody wants to pick up that specific thing, they can kind of pull that off the a la carte sponsorship menu.
Mm-hmm. And what about the kind of crowd that you get? You mentioned that you have your family there and stuff. Do you get a diverse crowd? Is it is it surprising sometimes to see all the different people who come? And I didn't direct that again, did I? But Adam, you go you go first.
I'm not going to help you. I guess I'm not going to help you out.
You're not helping me here, no. Come on, guys, help me out here.
Yeah, absolutely. There's people from all walks of life, and the biggest diversity is from, you know, experienced tech people. I mean, Randall show up. He's a Perl veteran and a genius in programming for sure. And there'll be just people who have never talked to. They're just like, oh, I just heard of Linux. They'll show up or something like that. We'll bring them into the room. And so it seems to bring people at any level without fear. They're just kind of excited to see what's this about and what could I learn or what could I do here. And they're usually leaving smiling.
Mm-hmm. That's always a good point, always a good place. We're almost out of time. I do have a couple more questions, though. And one I wanted to ask about MIFOS, what happened to that? Is that still around?
Oh, yeah, that's still around. Ed Cable is running MIFOS.org, has all the details there. They're growing. They've split into they're under the Apache Foundation now.
Ooh.
But – yeah, they're doing a lot with microfinance. That's still going on 10 years later, I guess.
Wow, that's actually almost a record for some of these longer projects, which is really nice. I also want to know, because Dan addressed this a little bit. So your first conference, your first time you did it, how did you promote it? How did you get people there in the first place?
Oh, man, I don't even remember. Maybe some mailing list. I want to guess we hopped on the Linux Fest mailing list and said, hey, come to this one too. We put up flyers all over. I'm blanking out. I don't even remember the attendance that year. It was a whirlwind for sure. I was running around doing everything with the rest of the three or four of us that were organizing back then. So the first year was really just like the, can we do this? And we did. And then it kind of went up a big cliff the second year of improvement and growth.
And if you had a group of five people, say, from some other random city, like, say, I don't know, not Boston because it's already happening there, but like I can't think of city names now. Boy, they let anybody do this
show.
Chattanooga. Yes, let's say Chattanooga. If five people approached you from Chattanooga and said, we want to put on a show, would you try to talk them into it or talk them out of it?
Well, first of all, I'd love to talk with them regardless. I think I'd do a bit of both, you know, see if they really wanted it, then people show up. If you really want it, you just it's not technically hard. You know, it really isn't. You just have to want to, and then you have to line up some key things, sponsors, space. But what are my three P's, Dan? Passion, people, and patience, I think, is important. One of my things I wanted is to have trying to invite Richard Stallman to speak in Seattle. And it took 10 years, I think, of me emailing him and saying, well, what about this? And I was like, what about if I made a conference that had the name GNU/Linux in it? He'd say, oh, sure, I'd speak at that. And I'm like, okay. So now I'm on the conference committee, and that's how I got involved. And eventually he did come speak. So that was fun. But it does take those things. I'm not going to say hard work, because you can get help. You know, there's lots of people who want to do this. It's totally doable. It's approachable, and it's fun. So you got a handful of people, you got a handful of conference right there.
Yep. I have the advantage that most of the conferences I've actually produced have been on cruise ships, so it's been a lot more fun too. So, but Seattle's not a bad place to be. It just doesn't move like a cruise ship does. So it's I guess it can on an earthquake, but we're not hoping for that right now. So again, we're almost out of time. Is there anything we didn't cover that you want to make sure our audience is aware of before I have to let you go? So we'll start with Adam. Adam.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, I've been pitching left and right. I apologize. But the sponsors this year, they're filling up the tables really quickly. But there's always room for more sponsors. And Linux Foundation, CSATs, Polyverse, Schedules Direct, Ada's Technical Books, and London's Trust Media have already committed. It's pretty exciting to see this overwhelming support. People believe in us, and they keep coming back. Sponsors are really happy with the changes in the expo hall, the exposure they get. That's my pitch. It's worthwhile for you sponsors. Its sponsorship sign up is still open even before the call for proposals. So, don't hesitate to reach out to me. I'll reach out to you if you don't.
Awesome. And Salt, same question.
Yeah. I don't know. I think this has been a great opportunity. Thank you for having us. I just wanted to add a fourth P to Adam's list, which is practice. This is our sixth year, and it's definitely every year we've sanded some edges down. So.
Awesome. And I have to ask my final two questions because otherwise my audience will yell at me, not literally, but they'll send me an email with capital letters in it, which is like yelling. what's your favorite scripting language and what text editor do you spend all day in? And we'll start with Adam.
Okay. Python and Vim. It was Perl, pains me to say that.
It's okay. You crossed
that was
over
me. That was me. Sorry, going, "Ooh, that wasn't Randall going."
and Salt, same two questions.
Yeah. I really like Bash. I really like Bash, but I'd probably say nowadays I spend most of my time in Python, Python R environments, and Vim as well.
Okay, well, I didn't get anything that I wanted to hear, but that's okay. The rest of the talk was great, except for those long, pregnant pauses, but that was our fault mostly. So Adam and Salt, thanks for coming on the show and talking about Siegel, and I'm looking forward to seeing you in November.
Thank you, Randall. Thank you. It was a pleasure to be on.
Thank you very much.
Great. So that was Adam Munson and Salt Hale talking to us about Siegel. What did you think there, Dan?
Yeah, great. It was really, really good to talk to the guys. And I tell you something, I mean, talking to them reminded me how great it is to organize an event, you know? Kind of like Adam was saying there, if you've got five people, you've got the start of a conference. So I think we should have one in every city, really. But I'm not going to organize them all, I'll be honest. But somebody can, and I encourage you to. No, but it does make me think, you know, how great it can be to organize something, see people come along. It's a really great thing that you can do.
Absolutely. It sounds like a lot of fun. And I wish I had an extra 20 hours a week to do all the things I actually want to do, especially all the stuff that we've talked about on this show over the 10 years that I haven't gotten to yet because I just didn't have time. And I'm still busy working on my next career and everything like that. So it's just taking up the rest of my time. But I'm definitely going to be there now that I know that the schedule isn't solid yet. Oh my God. Didn't see the 2017 on the top of the page. I'm gonna go ahead and pitch a 50-minute talk. I'm gonna do my Flutter talk that I did at Scale a few weeks ago, but of course updated because things will be different back then. So let's talk about who's coming up next. We've got The Lounge next week, which is a self-hosted IRC client. It's a fork of Shout, which I don't know anything about, except I know it's a fork of that. HubbleStack is a modular, open-source security compliance framework. The project provides on-demand profile-based auditing, real-time security event notifications, automated remediation and alerting and reporting. That sounds very exciting and very apropos to the kinds of things that are happening in the world today. React PHP, after that, is a low-level library for event-driven programming in PHP, as you might hear by the name of it. RBSpy lets you profile Ruby processes that are already running. You give it a PID and it starts profiling. It's a sampling profile, which means it can run low overhead and safe to run in production. That should be handy as well. Keycloak, an open source identity and access management for modern applications and services. Pillar Project is bringing the world's best cryptocurrency and token wallet that will become the dashboard of your digital life. So that's who we have on the books right now. We're always trying to book more guests. It's part of why I'm here at Red Hat that summit this week. You can go to twit.tv/floss, which is the homepage for this show, and see the big spreadsheet linked right from there. You can see who we're working on. If somebody that you want on the show that isn't on that list, please, as a project leader or community coordinator, contact me, Merlin@stonehenge.com, please by email, not just by tweeting. We do this by email, guys. We're old school, so don't be tweeting at me and saying things like that. Make sure to email me. We have a live stream at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time. We're normally on Wednesdays. We got bumped to Thursday this week just because there was something big happened yesterday. I think it was some Google I.O. or whatever. We're at live.twit.tv. We have a chat room. We take questions from there during the taping of the show. You can follow us at Floss Weekly on Google+ or at Floss Weekly on Twitter. You can follow me at Randall L. Schwartz on Google+ or at Merlin on Twitter. Like I said, I'm currently at the Red Hat Summit. It's only got one more day, but if you happen to see me, I had a couple of audience members come up and see me, and I had one guy that said, I have all your Pearl books, which is really cool. Nice to be recognized for that. So that would be cool. And speaking of Pearl, I'll be at the Pearl Conference in Salt Lake City in June. I'll be in Norway. If any of you are Norway audience members, please let me know, because I'll be on a cruise in July. We're stopping at just about every coastal city. So it's a 15-day cruise, and I'm going to be above the Arctic Circle in the summer. It'll be the first time I'll get to see a 24-hour day. Off my bucket list, finally. After that, I'm going to be coming immediately to San Diego. I'll be in San Diego for about a couple weeks there in late July. I have a low-carb conference that I'm going to, and I'm also just going to hang out and see things in San Diego. I haven't spent any sort of recreational time in San Diego. I've never seen the San Diego Zoo in all these years. I've never seen the San Diego Zoo, and I hear it's a world-class zoo, so I'm definitely going to do that coming up. Any plugs you want to make, Dan?
Yeah, seeing as we're talking about events, this is really timely, because I want to mention, I've mentioned it before, but there's an event called Liverpool Makefest, which is happening in Liverpool on the 30th of June. So you've got just under 2 months, about 8 weeks or something, or 7 weeks. And it's a huge event. It's an all-day event. It's free. It's in the Central Library. It's on 4 floors. It's about 2,000 people, something like that. It's really big. And I'm Wow. helping out with that. As we mentioned, organizing events, I should have mentioned that, really. But I'm doing the online stuff, which is probably easier for me than having to do the physical side of it as well. But if anybody's interested, anybody wants to come along, go to liverpoolmakefest.org or search for it and you'll find it. And I've actually been doing some podcasting again recently. I've been interviewing each week. I'm going to be interviewing a different maker about their project and how they got involved and what they do. And you can find those at makefest.podfactory.org or again, Google for it. And you'll find it on there. And it's going to be a really great event. I encourage anybody who's in the UK or can get here nearby to come for the day. If you're interested at all in things like Arduinos and Raspberry Pis and even some less kind of low tech stuff. We've got a lot of textile stuff going on. We've got arts and crafts. We've got all kinds of stuff. So yeah, just go to liverpoolmakefest.org or have a look on my Twitter, which is @methoddan. And I'll probably constantly be tweeting about it.
Well, I'm glad to hear you're back into podcasting again. So, I mean, it's been a while that you've been away from it entirely, and now you've been a guest on, or not a guest, a co-host on this show. You're not a guest. We don't talk to you like guests. You've been a co-host on this show quite a few times recently, which I really appreciate. I really hope you'll consider being the host on one of the two shows that I have to cover for the cruise. So that'd be a lot of fun if I can get you to host one of those. Anyway, so... welcome back to the show. That's usually what I say at the beginning of the show, so I don't need to say it now. But thanks, Dan, once again for helping me out with the show.
No problem. It's always great, and I'll see you again soon.
Absolutely. And we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.